coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation. It's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome to Hagman. This is the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. HagmanReportLive.com. That's where you'll find the video and audio segments for this program. That's HagmanReportLive.com. HagmanReport.com for all the print that you would like, including contributing articles and contributors' articles and such. HagmanStore.com for some delicious gourmet coffee. I want to tell you, it's Monday. It is the 14th day of September, 2020. I want to thank you all for joining this me, joining this program with me today. This me program today. Do I sound like Joe Biden? Not yet. Maybe. You know, the thing. That's right. A lot of things going on, of course. Senator Ted Cruz warning that our basic freedoms are one vote away from disappearing. How true is that? You've got the fascist garden gnome Fauci saying, hey, you know what? A vaccine is not going to end the restrictions, the response and restrictions from this communist Chinese party virus. No. Nope. Okay. There was a little remark by President Trump suggesting that Biden is using drugs to be coherent or to have to be coherent. Interestingly enough, now you're seeing America burn. Real quick, I've got with me on today's program, of course, John Moore. Again, I like to call John Moore, as I call many people, but him especially, the man, the myth, the legend, John Moore from thelibertyman.com. He's flying with me today, going over some headlines, going over some information that we need to talk about. There are a couple of things I want to start off with. Maybe we can bring him on, but I want him to see if this is possible. Two videos. Folks, if you're watching this at home, I can't wait for you to see these videos. Maybe you saw them. Maybe you did. And if you're driving, don't stop and look. Or don't look, stop and look, but don't look without stopping. Seriously. I've seen people do that. And of course that scares me. But, I don't know whether you saw this or not. And this is difficult for me to even get into or talk about. Two sheriff's deputies in Los Angeles were shot in Compton. Yeah, Compton, you know. Lovely place, by the way. Almost execution style. An unidentified perpetrator came up and shot two sheriff's deputies, a 31-year-old female with a 6-year-old child, and another 25-year-old sheriff deputy in the head, both of them. Here it is on your screen. There's a little maggot running away, that coward running away. Folks, look at this. This is Compton. This is the United States of America. This is what the violent rhetoric has done. The police officers are gravely injured. You can see, now, there it is. Now, this is obviously a black man. I don't know. It looks like a black young man. It's kind of bad video for CCTV from a nearby train station, but there it is. He's shooting through the passenger window and striking both deputies in the head, running away like the little maggot he is. And of course, the sheriff's deputy's car opens and the video cuts there. Okay. For those who can't see. All right. Well, as if that's not enough. All right. Let's go to, the reaction. Now, folks, if you have little children in the room, please get them out of the way. Get them out of earshot. Get them out of eyesight, eyeshot. Because more maggots show up. Leftist maggots. That's right. I'm using that term many times because Muppets just doesn't do it. Mopes just doesn't quite fit. Maggots. That's what these people are. Now, consider this. The two sheriff's deputies were taken to the hospital where they're being treated for their wounds. And at the hospital, you have supporters showing up, right? No, you don't. Don't forget, Compton, you don't have supporters showing up. What do you have? You've got maggots. This video is 2 minutes. Their vocabulary challenge. All right. In the interest of time, it just goes on for another, I don't know, several seconds talking like that. You know, I hope they die. I hope they effing die. Oink, oink, and so on. Again, now I'll say this. If that was my wife in the hospital bed, she wouldn't be because I wouldn't have her as a police officer. But if that was my wife and I was walking into the hospital, well, you can imagine, right? You can imagine. I would do everything in my power to take them all out. And folks, let me tell you, that's what I believe is going to start happening. Now, something happened over the weekend as well, in addition to this. This is just getting worse and worse and worse and worse. Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Police respond to a domestic. It's a Latino family. Lancaster Police, Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Now, there's a big thing in Twitter, the Amish country and all this. And Lancaster is a city of about 59,000, 60,000 people. It's like any other city. It is surrounded by farmland, Amish farmland. There is an Amish influence, obviously, but it's like any other city, okay, of that size. And what happened was Lancaster police, you got a call. Go to this location for domestic. Guy is trying to stabbing at his wife. Here's the Lancaster police released the body cam footage. Oh, and what happened? Spoiler alert. Here's what happened. The police officers responding to this call shot and killed the perpetrator. Why? Was it for sport? Was it because, well, just because? No. No. For those of you watching this, take a look and you'll see why. It started at 1:35 in the official video from the Lancaster Police Department. Go ahead. There's no immediate sound here. The sound will pick up here momentarily. Here you see, if you're watching or if you're listening to this, body cam of one police officer walking up to the residence of where the complaint is. There it is, opening the door. Now the video should pick up from here. Or not. Do we have video or audio? Apparently we don't have audio for this. Okay. Which I guess maybe is just as fine. Now, here is a still image of the perpetrator. He is a Latino. He is in orange shorts, a sleeveless t-shirt, and in his right hand is a butcher knife. He is chasing after the police officers with a butcher knife. The police officers began to retreat. He kept coming, and bam. There it is. I mean, there it is. See, they even put a nice little orange circle right around, or red circle right around his hand with the knife. Now, again, with all due respect to the Liberty man, John Moore, because we're going to be talking about all of this. So what happens? Obviously, this was a legitimate response, a legitimate shoot. Oh, no, no, no. Look at Twitter. Look at what happened to Twitter. See, if you follow the trending, you'll see the Lancaster thread. Protesters or protests break out after police fatally shoot a 27-year-old man. It doesn't matter. Now, this alone should show you. This is not about black lives. This is not about black. This is not about oppression. This is not about anything like that. This is a Marxist insurgency, as we've been saying, taking over the United States of America. This was a legitimate police officer shoot. Either shoot the guy or take a butcher knife in one of your major organs. And here's the issue. Okay, you've got the, I can't remember what it's called now. I think John might know, but it's a 21-foot rule, but there's a name for it. I think it begins with a T, and I can't remember what it is. But, in that 21-foot perimeter, 3 seconds in your, that perpetrator is on you. All right, period, end of story. So you've got all of these nice, fine folk in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And by the way, a lot of these came from other parts of the country that quickly. And if you scroll down, by the way, if you can, I don't know if you can or not, or if that's just a, okay, you keep going. There's a couple of things. There's the official statement by the Lancaster Bureau of Police underneath that. You can see where the protesters have broken out windows of the police department and the post office, and they set fire into the post office. There you got a panel of four. There's the crowd. Look at them all. Oh, how proud we are of our young people and the morons that are out there. Now, these are Muppets. All right. These are more Muppets than maggots. But you know what? They're graduating up to maggots. This is what's taking place. Now, what I'd like to go through with John is something Tucker Carlson talked about last week. You know, last week was the anniversary of September 11th, 2001. It was also the anniversary of Benghazi. Yeah, Benghazi. And how many people remember Benghazi? Oh, yeah. See, in a nutshell, Benghazi was the consequence of the Obama/Clinton foreign policy to get rid of why am I going blank here? Let's bring John on. My goodness. John, how you doing, man? Liberty.
Real
man.
Good. Doug, it's good to be with you, sir.
Yeah, it's good to be with you as well. Gaddafi, right? Libya, Gaddafi.
Well,
yeah.
The real deal there was Gaddafi was really going outside the petrodollar to sell his oil. Not involving the petrodollar. That's what made him an enemy of the state. As third world dictators go, he was not that bad a guy. He had screwed up many years earlier, and he learned his lesson when we bombed his palace and I think killed his young daughter.
Reagan did that. Yep.
He straightened up after that.
Yeah, he did.
And stopped doing that silliness. He was using oil money to improve the people of his country. Newlyweds got a home provided. Their education was paid for. For Africa, it was actually a pretty decent place for people to live. But his big mistake was selling the oil outside the petrodollar realm, and that made him an enemy of the state and made him somebody we needed to take out, of course. So that was already done. When Benghazi happened, that already happened. And,
right.
And at that point, in 2012, Benghazi, or Libya, I should say, was a broken state, a failed state, with reverting to slave markets and drugs. And it was a transition point for weapons the CIA was using to do other things with.
There it is. Yep.
So, yeah.
Yep. It was a Ho Chi Minh trail of weapons from North Africa, all across North Africa, up to ultimately for Syria. But yes, yeah.
Exactly. When the Obama administration found out what was going on, they decided to cut their losses. We had the Navy admiral who had a rapid response team of Marines ready to – they were already on the plane, ready to go, who could have been there in just a couple of hours. They were put on a stand-down. The admiral himself was relieved of his command by a second-in-command who apparently was a CIA asset, who relieved him of his command to prevent the Americans from being rescued in time to save lives. There's a docudrama called 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi. And like I say, a docudrama. I don't know how close it is to reality, but I believe it's fairly close based on what little limited knowledge I have. I like to point out the film for a secondary reason. And with what we've got coming at us, you know, the election is in 49 days, Doug.
Yep.
With what we got coming at us, people really need either night vision or thermal imaging. If you don't understand what night vision and thermal image can do to give you an advantage over your enemy, you really need to watch this movie, 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi. Most of that 13 hours takes place at night, where we've got about 10 or so Americans, they're private contractors, defending the embassy there. In Benghazi,
right.
Against hundreds of Muslims. If it had not been for night vision, they would have been overrun and all of them would have been murdered. As it was, I believe we lost two men. It might have been three. I don't recall exactly.
I believe four, but I could be wrong.
Well, regardless, the death count would have been complete. And, that took place, September 11, 2012.
Right.
So it's a something that most Americans have forgot about or didn't know about, unfortunately. An earlier incident, involving Black Hawk Down, a film called Black Hawk Down, a friend of mine was there in Somalia, and it's related, so I think we could talk about it.
Yeah.
I assume you saw the film Black Hawk Down?
Yes.
Okay.
Horrific.
One of the nuances. There was a boy, maybe a 10-year-old boy, on a hilltop overlooking the airport where the Americans were. So the Americans are in the helicopters flying over him, and he makes a report on a cell phone to let the skinnies, as we called the enemies there in Somalia, to let the skinnies know that the Americans were on the way. Here's what my buddy told me. I've asked him to come on my show, but it's still too painful for him to talk about it publicly. He says, John, well, that boy was there, and he did report on the cell phone, but here's what really happened. He was able to look inside the hangars where the Americans were, where they were set. They had their bunks set up and everything. He said when the Americans started putting their boots on, that's when he made the call, not when the helicopters were going over. That gave the enemy 15 minutes warning instead of 2 or 3 minutes. That was a massive advantage that the enemy had just by having a young boy on a hill overlooking the American base, giving real-time reports of what the Americans were doing. There also,
that's a good point, by the way, that you just made a really good point. I maybe it just kind of sunk in my head, but that advantage of time, okay.
Well, it's massive.
Oh, yeah.
The difference between 2 or 3 minutes and 15 minutes is massive. Yes. I believe the, Secretary of Defense was Les Aspin, I believe. Was that, and Clinton was the president during that mess.
It sounds about right. Yeah.
American officers in charge were requesting American armor to protect Americans in Somalia. That was denied. They had Pakistani soldiers and Pakistani armor. The Pakistanis refused to respond to help the Americans who were shot down in those helicopters in Somalia. Anyway, it's another nuance of it. We had American paratroopers there armed with M-16s and American Delta Force armed with M-14s. This goes to my dislike of the M-16, by the way, which has been forever, half a century plus. You'll see, and this is reality, when the paratroopers with the M-16s would shoot a skinny, they shoot him once, twice, three times, and the skinny enemy soldier would still be running. The Delta Force guys with the M-14, they shoot one skinny with one bullet from the M-14, and the guy would go down. That's the difference in stopping power between a .22 caliber bullet and a .30 caliber bullet. It's a massive difference. And now, after more than a half century of combat failures with the M-16, the Army's finally dropping that cartridge and that rifle and going to a heavier cartridge and a different rifle. It's about time. It's way past time.
You know, okay, so let me kind of take a side road here, digress a little bit. You just mentioned the difference in the calibers, and I know the gun enthusiasts and people who use guns all the time talk about the stopping power of different ammunition in different calibers and such. What's your thought? I'm just curious. I understand the science, the foot pounds, the all that. What's your thought between a 45, you know, that you're able to carry, you know, 6+1 versus a 9 millimeter where you might be able to carry what, 16+1? I mean, what's your thought on that?
I'm chuckling for a reason.
All right.
If you're on Pork Chop Hill in the Korean War, 19 rounds would be a really great thing. If you're facing off dozens of Black Lives Matters coming at you all at the same time, that would be a great thing. In a routine criminal encounter, however, where one or two or even three men want to cause you harm, a 45 is what you want. It has a track record of more than a century of being very effective as a man stopper. There was a incident publicized in St. Louis, Missouri, my hometown. Oh, this is about 20-something years ago, where a St. Louis City police officer was no more than 4 or 5 feet, maybe 6 feet at the most from the perpetrator, emptied out a semi-automatic pistol that had 12 or 14 rounds, and it didn't hit the perpetrator a single time. Not once.
See?
Not once.
Okay.
Multiple cartridges is not a substitute for training. It really isn't.
No, you're right.
And I'll give you a more extreme example. Extreme examples sometimes help make a good point. If you have two groups of men that want to cause harm to each other, one group, or one is defending, the other is attacking, the defending group is three Marines, three United States Marines with 100-year-old bolt-action rifles. The attacking group is 20 gangbangers with machine guns. I'll put my money on the three Marines with 100-year-old bolt-action rifles because they're going to kill those 20 gangbangers with machine guns. And that's the way that fight would end. So I know how popular high-capacity pistols have become. Americans love their pistols. Yeah. We have tens of millions of pistols in circulation in this country. And if you think that having a high-capacity magazine will mean, oh, I don't need to train because I got so much ammunition in this magazine. That's a mistake that can get you killed.
Absolutely.
Or you get something I mentioned when I train. I do train people to get their concealed carry permits. I'm an NRA-certified firearms instructor, rifle and pistol and concealed carry. You think that a laser sight will mean, oh, I don't need to go to the range because I can't miss because I got a laser sight. Where that laser is hitting, that's where I'll hit. That's a mistake that can get you killed also. There's no substitute for training. If you think you can substitute technology to take the place of training, that's a belief that can get you killed. And I tell my students, never ever trust your life with something that takes a battery, which is what laser sights are, of course, something that takes a battery.
Yep.
And most red dot sights the same way, something that takes a battery. We both know Mike Adams. Mike's been doing an excellent job reporting on this. My friend Dave Hodges also.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Mike Adams' most recent prognostications are that the day after the election is when all hell's going to break loose, with the caveat being anything can happen between now and then. Lancaster, Pennsylvania, last night, we've had 6 Antifa people arrested setting fires in Oregon and state of Washington. While the FBI denies that there's any arson at all.
Let me just make sure I do. Eric the Tech, do I have that? Yeah, sure I do. I do have a video clip of Newsom talking about the fires and what's really going on with the fires. Just so when you're ready, we can play that.
There's a deputy sheriff up there who was put on administrative leave because he told the truth about arsonists and Antifa.
Yeah.
And the sheriff, and this is very, very important, the sheriff apologized for what the deputy said. However, the sheriff did not contradict what the deputy said, which I think is extremely important.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
On Twitter, this moron, by the way, I don't know whether you saw this, actually set one of the fires, and I it was in the Pacific Northwest. I think it was in Oregon. And videotaped his own arrest. I mean, and he was known Antifa, you know, so
right. You
can't make this crap up. But if you don't mind, just a
second. I'll share it.
Okay. Go ahead. Go ahead, Eric. Hang on a second. It's the one right below the, let me look here. It's number 4. Yes, it is. To answer your question. Here it is.
This perfect storm.
This is
the
Gavin
debate
News.
Is over around climate change. Just come to the state
change.
Of California. Observe it with your own eyes. It's not an intellectual debate. It's not even debatable.
The debate is over around climate change.
California's rogue governor says the fires are due to climate change. But anyone with a modicum of awareness knows that this is an outrageous lie. We know exactly what causes the California wildfire. It is the result of two factors, dry seasons and people. Official state records have only been kept since the 1950s, and 2020 has been the most destructive season on record. But this isn't a new phenomenon. And the fires of the past were more destructive than the modern era. Through studies of tree rings and other natural evidence, researchers have documented multiple droughts in California during the past 1,000 years, including one that began in the year 850, which lasted 2.5 centuries. Before European settlers arrived in California, indigenous peoples used controlled burns to manage the dry season and to increase and improve their harvest. It is estimated they would burn 4.4 million acres of forest each year, and that is twice as much as 2020. Studies have shown that 97% of all forest fires are caused by humans. Smoking, campfires, and other accidents have always been a problem. Experts blame the recent wildfires on fire suppression and an overabundance of wood fuel. One of the reasons why the indigenous people burned so much forest was to keep this under control. Aside from human accidents, there is also arson. And we have seen plenty of arson in 2020. It's been sort of the theme.
If this country doesn't give us what we want, then we will burn down this system and replace it.
Several people have been arrested for starting fires along the entire West Coast. Homeowners are catching arsonists on their property. There are reports of people throwing Molotov cocktails out of moving vehicles on the freeway.
Suspicious vehicle 213 northbound 205. It's a dark Subaru with Texas plates throwing Molotov cocktails.
And there are videos of arsonists setting people's homes on fire. We know for certain that at least one of the arrested arsonists is directly involved with the BLM Antifa movement. And the rest certainly seem to fit the bill.
Pictures of some pretty nice-looking guys.
Local news is reporting on it.
A man has been arrested, accused of starting this fire.
One of two men accused of intentionally setting fire to fields along freeways.
But the FBI and the mainstream media are in full denial. A Clackamas County Sheriff's deputy was placed on administrative leave after warning locals about coordinated arson attacks.
What I'm worried about is that there's people stashing stuff, right?
Right.
It means that they're going to go in preparation,
mm-hmm.
right? And I don't want to sound like some doomsdayer,
right.
but it's getting serious.
And the Democrat Party is telling you it is all climate change.
Mother Earth is angry. She's telling us, whether she's telling us with hurricanes on the Gulf Coast, fires in the West, whatever it is, that the climate crisis is real and has an impact.
And telling you that the fires will soon come to your town if you don't vote for climate change.
What we're experiencing right here is coming to community all across the United States of America unless we get our act together on climate change.
Which is a pretty nasty threat, considering how many cities across America have burned by the hands of radical leftists over the summer. The 2006 film Apocalypto beautifully illustrated how the ancient Mayans' advanced knowledge of astronomy could have been used to frighten.
You were just talking about that Clackamas County deputy that was fired
right.
for talking. You're exactly
well,
right.
Well, I think he's been put on administrative leave.
All right.
Or was he fired?
It sounded like he was fired.
A deputy, a sheriff from another county won't probably hire him in a minute because he's a stand up guy. Which is what we need.
Yeah. Yes. So, you're 100% right. I mean, looking at this, I have a problem with this, John. I mean, Paul Craig Roberts, Zero has republished this, I guess it was yesterday or the day before, I'm not sure, saying that, the U.S. and its constitution have 2 months left. Basically, when Woodward wrote about Trump's Secretary of Defense, Mattis, and Trump's DNI, Dan Coats, talking about taking collective action to remove President Trump from office. Mattis said Trump is dangerous. He's unfit. So compare that or add that to what we're seeing taking place, by these leftist governors out there and mayors and such, like Wheeler and lunatics and like Pelosi and man, we got ourselves a need for night vision. We really do. But anyway.
Well, yeah. Absolutely. Well, I don't sell night vision, but, it's some of it's unavailable. I know one of the larger manufacturers has discontinued selling any night vision or thermal imaging to civilians at all. There's a lot of pressure on some of the more desirable stuff.
Go ahead, Doug. Yeah. If I can just, I'll tell you what, I've got night vision. I've used it on one operation in particular that made all the difference in the world. I got it from Ready Made Resources, Bob Griswold, and, folks, I'm not getting paid to say this. Okay. I'm not, but you want night vision, you want it, contact Griswold, Ready Made Resources. Since you don't sell it, John, I felt okay in saying that, but,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Go for it.
But okay, so yeah, go ahead.
It's amazing the difference night vision makes, and it can really be a lifesaver. Any person or group of people that want to cause you harm, if they know what they're doing, they're going to attack at night. Of course they will. The odds of the perpetrators having night vision is slim to none. It's possible, but it's very slim. If you live in the urban suburban area, there's always ambient light. But out here where I live, there's no ambient light at all, except whatever comes from the stars and the moon. And when it gets dark out here, it is really dark.
I've been there. That
even in an urban suburban area, targeted identification is very important. You don't want to be shooting an innocent person. So targeted identification is very important. That's what night vision and thermal imaging will help you with.
Exactly. And speaking of, you know, using things like this and helping and training and understanding what you're doing, folks, you haven't done so already. John Moore Patriot Training Course at Lake of the Ozarks this October 18th through the 23rd. John, you put together one heck of a course, let me tell you. There's a PDF at thelibertyman.com. And, hey, you know what, folks,
it's world-class training.
Yeah, it is.
Freedom Center USA is preparing to have a one-mile range ready to go here. Right now, they got a 1,000-yard range. But in the not-too-distant future, that will be expanded to a one-mile range. There aren't many places that you can shoot 1 mile under a controlled, safe environment, but you can there. So the first day, the 19th, is tactical pistol course. That's all day long, 9 hours. Tuesday, Wednesday, basic tactical rifle course. Wednesday, we have a full day of combat first aid trained by a genuine combat medic who's been in combat. Then we have the fabrication use of non-lethal sound and light producing booby traps, map and compass, cross-country navigation and communication security. And, this is an all-inclusive package. It includes staying at the Margaritaville world-class resort, breakfast and lunch every day, and a moonlight dinner cruise on the lake the last evening we're there. So it'll be a lot of fun. People will learn a lot and have very luxurious accommodations every night to get all refreshed and ready for the next day.
Sorry about that. Sorry about the pause, that is. When you were on last time, people were saying, well, man, that's just a lot of money to spend for a course. I don't have that kind of money. You know what I would suggest? If you have a school, maybe you have a small school where, you know, or a church, send one person. If you can't afford it, pull your money and have one person as the point person to go out there at the very least. Is that okay? I mean,
it is okay. And that one person would become the instructor for the church or the school or whatever group sends them, a neighborhood group. And, we'll make a special deal for the spouse who does not want the training. Just, we can talk about that with my, event planner, Betsy Murphy. And for those who don't have internet service, our event planner is Betsy Murphy, and her telephone is 636-530-9502. I say again, 636-530-9502. This is the kind of training that can save lives, literally. I hope people will take advantage of it, and we'll set this up again. Probably early spring, we'll do another class. But for right now, this is it.
I hope we have the time. And I'm not saying that to create fear. I just hope we have the time for a spring class. Even if we don't.
We hope for the best and plan for the worst. I've got an Alaskan cruise for next June, a Caribbean cruise in February planned. And, of course, I hope for the best. But I plan for the worst. I'm ready to go. Whatever happens, I'm ready.
Well, you know, going back to your class, I want to take this just for the booby trap section, non-lethal sound and light. That sounds like that would be pretty doggone interesting.
It will be. It's be taught by a former Navy SEAL, very dear friend of mine I've known since 1979. And, he's having fun with it because he's getting caught up on all the latest stuff himself. Yeah, and this is booby traps, sound and light producing booby traps be primarily for identification of people approaching your secure area. Trespassing typically needs to be set up on your own property. So if somebody's trying to sneak up on you at night or in the daytime, that there would be an alarm set off and you would know that they're approaching you.
You know, and thank you for that. You know what kind of blew my mind? Over the weekend, I had a chance to, friends of ours, they've got a young man. He's 22 years old. Nice guy. I mean, nice young man. Very, very well mannered, well behaved. And, long story, they're moving and going out of town. So I handed him what I thought would be a good thing for them, the family, to have, but I handed the young man a map, you know, a paper map.
I know what's coming, but go ahead.
And he said, What's this? I said, well, you can use that to plan your route. Well, I've got my phone.
I said,
Yeah. Okay. John, man, have we gone down the bad trail, haven't we? I mean,
the summer between my junior year and senior year, I drove my grandparents from St. Louis to Laramie, Wyoming. And I navigated using a map, of course. This would have been the summer of 65. I've been teaching map reading for decades, and there's such basic things that most adults don't know of any age. I'll give you one quick example. All even-numbered highways in the United States of America run east-west.
Correct.
All odd-numbered highways in the United States of America run north-south. It's shocking how many people don't even know something that basic, Doug.
Yeah, you want to talk about the numbering, too? The numbers go from east to west, south
well,
to north?
Well, the numbers, depending on where you are. But the north-south highways typically get larger as you go west.
Right.
And the
smaller as you go west.
That's right. Smaller.
Yeah, smaller.
The east-west highways, east-west.
East-west get higher as you go north, and north-south.
Smaller as you go south, right. I-10 is as far south as you go for the federal highway. And then the federal highways with three digits, they're just like the federal government. They go round and round. You end up the same place you started. That's true, isn't it?
Yeah. Get on 290 and all of a sudden you're in circles I got you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 190 is different, I can't remember, right around Syracuse area.
This is a fact of life because I've taught these things for decades. There is a massive difference between most men and most women when it comes to learning how to use a map and compass. And I would say 98% of the women don't get it initially and have very extreme difficulty. And 98% of the men do get it pretty quickly and with very little difficulty. And that's just a true statement. It's not a matter of any commentary on the difference between men and women other than that's a fact of life if you're teaching a map and compass course.
Mm. Yeah, I'm not sure why that is. However, I'll say this. My wife, for some reason, my wife must be the exception because she can read a map if she's in the passenger side, read a map better than I can, quicker than I can, and tell me how lost I am.
Well, one of the things I do see women doing is they attempt to keep turning the map in circles rather than keep it oriented north-south. And when I see it, I'm like, what in the world are you doing? I've seen that multiple times also where the female will attempt to turn the map in circles to figure out what's going on.
I've seen that too. And yeah, Which, by the way, again, you know, this October, folks, go to thelibertyman.com and click on the training course that's coming up here in October. I'm going to tell you, man, I have a feeling, I'd love to have somebody who attends this class. I'd love to have them on as a guest for, I don't know, with you maybe for a half hour or so someday afterwards. Just to let people know what, you know, what they felt and what they experienced and what they learned, because I have a feeling this is going to really help a lot of people.
Well, the ones that show up will get a lot of help. I should have mentioned also something. We have to have some humor here. Face mask made from mosquito netting available at my website. I just got a note from the man manufacturing my webmaster, Tim Spencer. He says they're all caught up on back orders. They got three lovely Filipino women in his hometown, Salem, Missouri, sewing these things up 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, sometimes 6 days a week. They're all caught up now. And people love these things.
So you're running a sweatshop then? Okay, I got it.
Actually, one woman was getting paid so well making the face mask, she quit her day job. but it's people love these things. You can be in compliance, walk into a store, hospital, clinic, your place of employment, a restaurant, and you're in compliance, and you can still breathe. So there's a practical side to it.
You know, I must have gotten half a dozen or so emails this weekend asking when you were going to have those in stock. So folks, go to libertyman.com. And so these masks are made out of special mosquito netting, right?
Right.
Okay. All right.
Well, initially we were going to make them out of fishnet, but that would be too rough against the skin.
Yeah. Don't like fishnet stockings. They chafe. No, I'm kidding.
I don't want to know how you know that.
I really don't. And I'm funning with you folks, but no, it's, so these, you haven't had any problems? I mean, if I wore one of these masks into a store, I would be in compliance. I guess I would, huh? You
know? Well, of course. It says, what does the sign say? Face covering or mask. And it meets that definition. Obviously, it meets it. The whole thing with masks is a method of control. When somebody is not so caught up in the fear, here's what I'll ask them. Let's say you're a mask wearer, Doug, and I'm trying to inform you. And I'll say, Doug, how does a virus enter the human body? And you may say, I don't know. And I'll say, well, Doug, it enters through a mucous membrane. And I'll say, Doug, how many mucous membranes do you have on your face? And you might think about that, and I'll say, well, Doug, you got five. One mouth, two nostrils, two eyeballs. What does a mask cover? It covers three of the five. Unless you cover all five, you're not keeping a virus from entering your human body, are you?
But don't you have to touch your eyes, John?
The virus can be airborne.
Oh
yes, absolutely can be airborne. Of course it can.
Folks watching this live, or there it is right there, folks, on your TV screen. That's what they look like. All right. And so go to thelibertyman.com and order away. Hey, they're pretty handsome.
Well, I just mailed a bunch of them to my daughter's family up in Metro Seattle. My daughter is an hour north of Seattle, and all outdoor activities are cut down because of the smoke from the state of Oregon, which is hundreds of miles away.
Well, yeah, and even in California with I don't know if you saw the pictures, the red skies. I mean, it's apocalyptic looking.
Right. Well, they try to take advantage of anything they can, and in calling this a consequence of human activity causing climate change is part of the narrative now, isn't it?
Yeah, which is why I played that clip, Gavin Newsom making the NASA himself going out there and saying, you know, look – you know, here's an exhibit for climate change. No, it's not. You know, it's your imbecilic in lack of proper forest management, you know, where they've got dry tinder, as they said, and not burning off the excess and not taking care of business. Because why? Because they have laws against it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, the commentary was making a good point about how the Native Americans have dealt with this for centuries.
Yes.
You know, they may not have the technology we've got, but the Native Americans had a lot of wisdom based on centuries of doing things, knowing what worked and what didn't work. And they were implementing that wisdom to burn off stuff before it became a massive supply of fire material for a really big fire. Here in the Ozarks, we do the same thing. It's a lot of times this time of year, farmers will burn off their fields, maybe a little bit lighter. It helps improve these fields. So the following year, I did this here myself, the year after we burn off the field, the grass comes back greener and better and healthier than you've ever seen it.
Interesting. Yeah. See, I'm not a farmer, and I defer to your expertise, but you know, yeah.
Well, I'm no farmer either, but that's my, you know, agriculture in my neighborhood is two things, cattle and timber. And you need green, healthy grass for the cattle.
Right.
And that's how you get it. You burn off the field, and it kills off the things you don't need, and the healthy grass comes back better and healthier and greener than it was the year before.
Oh, there you go. So, yeah, but what we don't need are these Muppets running around that are causing these fires intentionally, and they're doing that. And you know, you and I spoke about this before, and John, I know you talk about this on your radio program, by the way, folks. If you want to listen to John, just go to thelibertyman.com, and right there on the front page, you'll see it says, I don't know, you can't miss it. It says, listen to John Moore, the John Moore Show live on RBN. And there's a little player right there. If you dig down through the player, into the player, and into the archives, you can get the archives in case you missed something. And I'm sure you did, but listen to them Monday through Friday. It should be required listening because it's an hour. I'm sorry. It is 2 hours, right?
3 hours.
Three hours. I'm sorry.
As of a couple of weeks ago. Now, this is, I think, my fourth week of doing 3 hours. I knew it would change things, and it's changed my life in a number of ways. But they've been, the trade-offs have been worth it. And the owner, station owner of Republic Broadcasting, Mr. Statmo, he says, John, nobody in this network has 3 hours a day. And I said, well, John, I want to try it out. And so far, it's working out okay.
Yeah, you know, I give you a lot of credit. Anymore, I am having, I saw Alex Jones come on, and like him or don't like him, it doesn't matter, but he came on the other day and he said, you know, it's getting hard for me to do this anymore. You know, he said, I got up at 4 o'clock this morning. I got up at 4 o'clock this morning. Okay. You go through all of the headlines, all of the news. You do all of the research. You put all of the video clips together and you see all of the ugly. And you know, how do you get through that, John? That ugliness, and how do you not lose perspective? How?
Well, that's been a lifelong quest for me. I was mentioning this morning the Tet Offensive. The first night of the Tet Offensive, that was the attack from the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese Army. The end of January 1968, our commander, our battalion commander, had everybody together. We're sitting on the concrete floor. He's standing and addressing us. And as he's telling us what's going on, the enlisted men who knew me and some of the NCOs, I'm 20-year-old corporal. Now, they're looking at me to see if I would give affirmation to what the commander was saying, nod my head yes or give a little thumbs up very discreetly, because they knew the following. That 20-year-old Corporal John Moore was the man who briefed the battalion commander on what was going on every day.
Uh-huh.
Because months before that, he asked me, he says, Moore, would you go to the secret briefing at the Tactical Operations Center Monday through Friday so I can stay at the officer's club and drink coffee with my buddies? He didn't put it that way, but that's what he wanted to do. And I said, yes, sir, I can do that. Well, I was there every morning anyway, picking up classified documents on my way to pick up more classified documents from the CIA, which I actually read, which nobody else wanted to read. So that's why the men were looking at me for affirmation that what the commander was telling us was actually the straight skinny as opposed to something else. So I've been dealing with this for decades, dealing with harsh realities, the real deal, and I don't know that I have to think about too much, Doug, because just part of my persona is dealing with raw intelligence, gathering it up, analyzing it, and making sense of it, which I did, of course, in Vietnam also. The Tet Offensive has been described frequently as a failure of intelligence. Well, it was not a failure of intelligence at the lowest level. And as a 20-year-old corporal in Vietnam in September 1967, I knew there was going to be a Tet Offensive in the end of January 1968. There was nobody lower in the intelligence world than a 20-year-old corporal who'd been in Vietnam just a few weeks. So if I knew it, everybody of any consequence knew it. Of course they did. It was not a failure of intelligence.
I think history is proven.
It was a failure to act on intelligence is what it was.
Yes. Yeah, history has proven that out, I believe, which, of course, that was the Chinese New Year.
That's what they call the Chinese New Year celebration, right. Called Tet. It's a combination of 4th of July, Christmas, and New Year's, all combined together. Gifts are exchanged, fireworks are shot off, and it's New Year's. So everything's combined. It's a massive holiday for the people in Southeast Asia.
And Americans are attacked when they're in Vietnam. Yeah. And so you knew this was going to take place. Obviously, So
all that fall, September, October, November, December, January, I was telling my buddies, guys are going to hit us. You get that disgusting fruitcake from your parents for Christmas. Don't throw it away. Hold on to it. The popcorn that the chocolate chip cookies are packed in, and I ship them to keep the popcorn. Stock up on some soft drinks. We didn't have bottled water back then, but we had soft drinks. The first day of the Tet Offensive, the U.S. Army had 1 C ration for every 2 men in my battalion. That's all the food we had, officially. Unofficially, my buddies have been stocking up on food. We had no more than 2 magazines of ammunition per man when the Tet Offensive began. It was pretty dire circumstances, to say the least. We had no hand grenades, no automatic weapons. Well, I guess you shoot the M14 on full automatic, but you really don't want to do that. So we were in a tough situation, and I play bumper music on my show where Colonel Hal Moore, during the Battle of Hai Trang in the Vietnam War, it's the film We Were Soldiers. He's ordering his men to fix bayonets. And that's the 2 words no soldier ever wants to hear. Is fixed bayonets. That means we're either out of ammunition or close to it. All we've got left to do is put a knife on the end of our rifle to fight with. So I've been there and done that. That's why I always have lots of ammunition, Doug.
Fixed bayonets. Yeah, that would be, I got to tell you, John, I'd have a problem. Wow. God bless you for being there and doing things that other people didn't at that time. Folks, you're listening to The Hagman Report right here on the Global Star Radio Network. John, I'm just going to do a station ID here and take care of a little bit of business. Going to come right back to you, folks.
All right.
Hagman Report. HagmanReportLive.com. HagmanReportLive.com. That's where you go for all of the video, audio downloads, and you can hear John Moore all throughout. You can catch him, Hagman Report Live, through many of his appearances, as well as other guests, HagmanReport.com for all things written and news of the day, HagmanStore.com for some great coffee. I want to thank you, the listener, the viewer, for supporting this program. Thank you so much. Without you, we could not do what we do. And I also want to mention Lightstream. You know, you don't need to be an expert to know that consolidating credit card debt into one low fixed rate can save you money. You can start saving today with a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream. Lightstream's fixed rate credit card consolidation loans start at 5.95% APR with auto pay and excellent credit, lower than the average credit card interest rate of over 19% APR. I was going to say 29%, and it came out 2 point. But can you imagine that 19% APR interest rates on your credit card? That's a lot of interest. I've got to tell you, get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000 with absolutely no fees. The loan application is 100% online, and you can even get your money as soon as the same day you apply. Here's what our listeners need to do. My listeners can save even more with an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Hagman. That's two N's on Hagman. It is LIGHTSTREAM. That's LIGHTSTREAM, all smushed together, .com/Hagman, lightstream.com/Hagman. Subject to credit approval, rate includes a 0.50% autopay discount. Terms and conditions apply. Offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Hagman for more information. You will thank me later, and I know that we've taken advantage of that. I got many testimonials. One real quick one here that said, heard the commercial, checked into a consolidation loan, and a few hours later had my approval and funds ready to be transferred. Awesome. Indeed, it's awesome. Lightstream.com/Hagman. John Moore is my guest. And, wow, man, I'll tell you what. Right before that break, fix bayonets. You know, imagine that today. People with skinny jeans running around throwing bricks, being told to fix their bayonets. They'd wet themselves. They really would.
If they even knew what a bayonet was.
Yeah. What is that? Yeah, my goodness. John, whatever you, I kind of wanted to get you, if you don't want to do this, it's okay with me. I kind of want to get your take. Last week, Tucker Carlson had there was like a 12-minute, he did a 12-minute like segment. I'm not going to play 12 minutes, but he did talk about the current situation, the state of affairs today. And did you know we went through a similar period back in 1908? Were you kind of aware?
I was not aware of that nuance of history. Okay. I was thinking about that this morning. I watched the clip. All my grandparents were, adults. So see, my grandfather would have been, well, my paternal grandfather would not have been quite an adult. My grandmother, let's see, she was 18, 1904, so she would have been 22 years old. But, I knew people that lived during that time, but that never came up in any of our conversations. I'm not sure how widespread that was, how many cities, if it was the communist insurrection, and because of course there were communists then, active around the world. I wouldn't be surprised if it was communists behind it. I don't know who was behind it. Do you know?
Well, I'll tell you what, if you don't mind, Eric Tech, can we bring that clip up and go to, I don't know, midway through that? He talks about the 1908. He says this. He says, you know, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, you know, what we're seeing today is really not, I mean, it's not something we haven't seen. This country hasn't seen before. And then he goes into what happened in 1908. And I was listening to that. I'm thinking, my goodness, I didn't know this. So if we can go about halfway through that and, you'll see it. It'll be evident. Here it is, folks.
Combined probably accounts for the radicalism you're watching.
It's coming, though.
But we don't need to know that because we don't need to understand why rioters riot in order to oppose rioting. We should always oppose rioting, no matter what its justification. These are the forces of chaos and destruction. They are working to tear down our country. That's all we need to know. If we care about our families and our civilization, about the future of our descendants, we have got to fight them like everything depended on it, because everything does depend on it. Quote, when compared with the suppression of anarchy, Teddy Roosevelt once told the Congress, every other question sinks into insignificance. The anarchist is the enemy of humanity, the enemy of all mankind. His is a deeper degree of criminality than any other. Roosevelt wrote that in 1908. It was just 7 years after an anarchist assassinated the president of the United States, William McKinley. He was Roosevelt's running mate. In some ways, 1908 isn't so different a period in American history as the one we're living through right now. In 1908, America was fast becoming an unstable country. Mass immigration had made the society far less cohesive. New technology completely upended the way people lived and the way they worked. There was a recession underway in 1908, coupled with high unemployment. People were angry at the banks, at big business, angry at capitalism itself. And there was also racial unrest. During one race riot in 1908 in Springfield, Illinois, Mobs burned buildings and attacked citizens in their homes. More than a dozen people died. 1908 was a chaotic moment, so not surprisingly, some people became radical. They called themselves anarchists. They believed in violence. In February of that year, an anarchist shot a priest to death during communion at church in Denver. He cited no reason for doing it. He just said he hated Christianity. A few weeks later, another anarchist tried to assassinate the chief of police of Chicago at his home. Later that month, anarchists staged a deadly riot in a park in Manhattan. One of them threw a bomb at police officers. Quote, "I came to the park to kill police," he later said. "I hate them." Throughout 1908, there was at least one anarchist bombing every month of the year in the city of New York. Sound familiar to you? Then, as now, the radical left leveraged economic anxiety to force their program on America. Anarchists attacked cops and clergy and public buildings precisely because these were the symbols of permanence and authority. They were the symbols of power greater than the mob, so they must be destroyed. The anarchist goal was to topple the nation itself. Teddy Roosevelt knew that. He understood that systems that tolerate anarchy don't last long. If mobs are allowed to attack the police, why do I have to pay taxes? Why do I have to obey traffic laws? Or for that matter, obey the FDA or the EPA or the local health department or anyone else who claims to be in charge? People quickly start thinking like that when anarchists are allowed to have their way. And why wouldn't they think like that? Once they do, things fall apart fast. Society itself was at stake in 1908, as it is now, and Teddy Roosevelt understood it. Our leaders, Democratic leaders, don't understand that. Or more likely, they don't care. Chaos serves their purposes. Consider Barack Obama. Obama is a smart man. He's a very gifted speaker. Many people found him inspiring, and it's understandable why. But when the fog lifted after Obama's 8 years in office, what was left? A dying middle class. A nation more radically divided by race and by income. A population so hostile to their political leaders that they elected Donald Trump president. By any measure, Barack Obama left a wake of destruction behind him. In the end, one of the relatively few who prospered was Barack Obama himself. Obama and his wife became unimaginably wealthy, legitimately rich, with huge estates in different parts of the country. Where did Barack Obama get all that money? No one asks. We're too busy hating each other. Obama stokes that hatred because it helps him. Here he is at the Democratic convention this summer.
Americans of all races joining together to declare, in the face of injustice and brutality at the hands of the state, that Black Lives Matter. No more, but no less. To the young people who led us this summer, telling us we need to be better. In so many ways, you are this country's dreams fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
The young people who led us this summer. It's hard to believe Barack Obama said that. Obama has an internet connection. He sees the news. He knows that the same young leaders he is promoting on stage burned buildings, looted stores, murdered people. Obama is smart enough to know that what the mobs are doing isn't bringing people together, just the opposite. Riots don't heal wounds, they create them. The violence that Barack Obama's youth brigades have unleashed on this country, if anything, increased racial bigotry and distrust. The riots have certainly accelerated residential segregation, as higher income people flee the racially diverse cities for sedate monochromatic destinations like Martha's Vineyard, where, by the way, Barack Obama himself lived. Like any good arsonist, Obama was sure to exit the building before he lit the fire. Someday, Obama and many leaders like him may flee farther than that. An island off the coast of Massachusetts won't be far enough. They'll be in Switzerland by then, or Austria, or New Zealand, or somewhere where they won't have to live with the consequences of the society that they created. But for the rest of us who plan to stay, we have no choice. We have to fight. Anarchism goes by many names. Right now it's called Antifa and BLM. But the poison is always the same, and the consequences of imbibing it never change. If we're going to survive as a country, we must defeat this.
Yeah, even the lady of the studio dog got upset about that. I forgot to mute the thing. But I found that interesting. I didn't realize back in 08 all that stuff happened, but he's right on a number of levels, including today, where Yeah, maybe Martha's Vineyard won't be sufficient. Maybe he'll have to flee further, as will all of these others. Warren Wilhelm Jr., otherwise known as Bill de Blasio, and Wheeler and Brown.
Well, a country with no extradition would be the ideal place for him.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of no extradition, any thoughts on what in the hell is going on? And I mean that, hell, literal hell, because I would say this is hell when you don't have justice. With the Department of Justice, Mueller's team erasing 30 cell phones and messages and texts. Did you see that? I mean,
I didn't see it, but that's obviously destruction of evidence of possibly crimes being committed. And I'm sure it's a violation of multiple Department of Justice protocols to be doing that.
At the very least, the Records Act anyway, but. You know,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
I don't know. Man.
Well, if they're so fearful that they're willing to violate their own protocols, that shows there's a lot there. Inevitably, there will be something that gets left behind. That always happens. And there's always the possibility of, having these men to give statements under oath. And I think there'll be a lot of Fifth Amendment exceptions there, won't there?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, okay.
Unless you're given immunity. And then they have what they call use immunity, which is a great tool in a case like this, where they'll agree not to prosecute or reduce the prosecution or reduce the punishment if the person will give sworn statements about what really happened.
Yeah, so... Yeah, you can do whatever you want and you'll get immunity for doing whatever you want as long as you tell the truth about what really happened, sometimes and often for a different and separate purpose. But
well, there's dozens of clerks and low-level people who know a lot and have their whole, typically men and women in their 20s and early the mid-30s who are doing the day-to-day work for the upper-level people, that they don't want to see their whole life ruined when you're 30 years old. So giving them immunity in order for the testimony could be a really good thing.
Yeah, I agree. I'm looking at here. Would you say we have 50 – how many days left to the election? 50-some days?
49. 49.
No, you, wow. We must have been on air for a long time. So 49 days to election day. And,
right.
I'm looking at things and people are saying, well, you know, these, arrests or indictments are coming. Well, 49 days left. We, how many years? Three years and how many hundreds of days? And we had nothing.
I'm not sure at this point how much difference it would make, Doug. I've been a big proponent and very enthusiastic for indictments, and I remain enthusiastic in supporting indictments. I'm not sure for the general population that there'll be enough coverage to make much of a difference. My feeling is that Donald Trump will win by a landslide. Support of this man nationwide has only increased, has not decreased. And thank goodness we have an electoral college to prevent us from becoming a democracy. That's the purpose of the electoral college, is to prevent the United States of America, a republic, from becoming a democracy.
Oh, how eloquently stated that was. It is that just that simple, folks, and how eloquent John Moore was in saying that. And the Electoral College exists so we don't become a democracy. Simple as
right.
that.
And that may upset people, but you really, if you read the Federalist and the Anti-Federalist papers, well, there may have been one exception, but I don't believe any of the Founding Fathers wanted us to ever become a democracy. Any time democracy was ever mentioned among those discussions in the 1770s, it was not something that was mentioned favorably, not at all. These men were all very well educated. You could not get into Harvard back then unless you could translate Greek and Latin into English. you would not be getting the door as an 18-year-old to even become a student. They knew history. They knew world history. They knew what had happened to every democracy for 2,000 plus years. Every one of them failed, without exception.
And yet, listen to the people who are really taking the Electoral College to task, and they don't even know why it exists or really what it is and how it works. So you've got this absence of any knowledge because our education systems have become so corrupted by the communist agenda, exactly what they want in order to take down this country. John Moore's my guest, folks. TheLibertyMan.com is his website. Don't forget, this coming October 18th, I believe it is, through the 23rd. Is that right? 18th through 20th?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Great session.
World-class resort, world-class training. We've never done this before. It's our first time out of the box. And like I say, we'll schedule another one for probably March or April. Give us more time to promote it this time. And we don't know what the future holds. I'm optimistic with my personal life, and I'm also prepared in my personal life to deal with Antifa. If they come down in my neighborhood, they'll be sorry they did it. A gentleman I'll be talking to today, he lives up in Sandy Hook, Connecticut. His children went to Sandy Hook Elementary School. He's friends with the mother, one of the children who were murdered there. There was supposed to be a Black Lives Matter demonstration right in front of his house yesterday. I haven't found out the outcome yet, if it happened or not. But he and his neighbors and friends of his were going to block off the street to prevent Black Lives Matter from coming to their neighborhood and causing damage, property damage and loss of life. And like I say, right off near his house is the ocean. And there was supposed to be a 200-boat flotilla supporting President Trump yesterday. So I'll be getting details from him later today to find out what if anything, happened.
We had a, here in Erie, Pennsylvania, on Lake Erie, a whole boatload of boats. Seriously, it was something to see, a bunch of boats in support of Donald Trump, which, you know, I really believe, like you do, that he's going to win by a landslide. What scares the what out of me is, the voting fraud, that kind of stuff, you know, the mail in.
That's real. Yeah. And that's why we need, when we keep talking about this, Doug, every week, we're fast approaching the last day to get registered to vote.
Yep.
It's going to vary in place to place. But if you let that get past you, you won't be allowed to vote. And
that's right.
It's very disturbing how many conservative Christian Americans haven't even bothered to vote. And if they are registered, they don't go to vote. It's very, very disturbing. We still have the numbers. The demographics are not in our favor 10, 20 years in the future. But for the time being, we got the numbers to win this thing and win it big. And everybody listening to us, make sure that your friends and your conservative friends and neighbors are registered to vote, that they actually get to the polls. If they can't get to the polls, vote absentee ballot. This is the election of a lifetime right here. We're living history. There will be hundreds of books written about the events of 2020, as well there should be. And we're living history, and we need to have history go in our favor. Whether the president's reelected or not, things are going to get bad after that election. We got a better chance, though, if the president gets reelected. Don't you agree, Doug?
100%. And by the way, there was a Twitter thing that was trending about Donald Trump's army, and that the current administration, they're looking for volunteers to be poll watchers, and I fully support that, folks.
Right. You know, we need to be registered to be a poll watcher also.
Yes,
you
do.
You don't walk up the day before or the day of. That's a registration process also, and there's a cutoff date for that.
That's right. So, folks, please do what John says, and please register. You know, I was going through the comments of the YouTube section on our show, and somebody said, well, I'm voting for Jesus
Christ. Plus, there's a bonus if you're a poll watcher.
Oh,
at least in my jurisdiction, the county clerk provides coffee and donuts in the morning, and then all kinds of cold cuts and lunch type stuff for lunch. These people were there for 12 hours.
Yeah.
And, it's just possible. I can't promise it, but you might have access to some fresh donuts and coffee and, nice cold cuts and cheese and snack type stuff. Maybe. trying to drum up a little enthusiasm for this here, Doc.
There might be some garnish on the cold cut plates, you know.
Right.
No, but you know what? I think it's our duty to really, if we have the ability, that block of time, sign up to be a poll watcher. But John's right; you have to be registered. So register. And I was telling you, I saw one of the comments on YouTube. I'm sure a well-meaning Christian, I'm sure definitely a Christian, and perhaps well-meaning, saying, well, I'm voting for Jesus Christ. I'm thinking to myself, you know, first of all, he's not running. Second of all, you know, out of the 1,100 or close to 1,200 candidates, and there are that many on the, that are, you know, proclaim themselves as candidates. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with people like this?
Well, it may have been, you don't know if it's a tongue in cheek comment or somebody was being serious.
But I've heard serious, but I've heard people saying, I'm going to sit this one out because,
I hear that too.
Lesser of two evils is still evil.
Well, I'm just one vote. What do I count? I've seen in my county, we had a woman running for a position. I think it was a prosecuting attorney. She lost by 6 votes, and she had more family members than that 6 votes who didn't take the time to vote. That's how, okay. In these local elections, 5 or 6 votes will make the difference between who does, who does not get elected. So we need as many people out there as possible. There's a lot at stake here, not just the presidential election, but we have county sheriffs, state reps, state senators, U.S. Reps and U.S. senators up for re-election. All the U.S. reps are up for re-election, and 1/3 of the senators say get re-elected every 6 years. So it's important at every level that we get constitution supporting sheriffs elected, that at every level at the county, city, county, and state, we have constitution supporting candidates being elected. It's incredibly important. Every election is important. However, this one raises to a whole new level of importance because we're at a crossroads here. Will we remain a free people as a republic, or are we going to go down the road to unbridled socialism?
Yeah. And again, it takes me back to really, when I'm looking at the headlines, I'm looking at all of the, little nuances that then, you know, that, whether it's on social networking or wherever, I'm thinking, my goodness, do these people really, number one, the left, do they really believe what they're saying? Number two, do they understand it? And thirdly, do they really want what they're saying? Because there is no utopia in communism or socialism. And, you know, they're going to be the, one of the first ones under the bus when that bus begins moving.
Well, it was so wonderful, you know, 90 miles of ocean between Cuba and the United States,
mm-hmm.
90 miles of water, mm-hmm. getting on rafts made from old inner tubes. I mean, you're risking your life literally to escape Cuba, come to the United States. Of course, you don't have to do that anymore, but for decades you did. And I have a number of very good friends who, their families, escaped Cuba. Socialism/communism is something you escape, not something, you know, they have walls to keep people in, not walls to keep people out.
Mm-hmm.
South Africa, before the communists took over, we always hear that, and my liberal friends say, John, you can't talk about this. I said, well, I will talk about it. South Africa, under white apartheid, had a wall to keep blacks out of the country. It was the best place in Africa to be a black man, was in South Africa under apartheid. So they had a wall to keep people out before communism took it over. That's what was really going on there.
That bears repeating. I mean,
well, it's the truth. If you look into it, you'll find out. South Africa under apartheid, under the evil, harsh white rule, had a wall to keep black people out of South Africa because it was the best place in the entire continent, the entire continent, to be a black man.
Hmm. Think about that.
That's reality. That's reality.
Yeah. Yeah.
I went to a presentation by a black mayor from a township in Africa. This would have been in the mid-1980s, Mayor Linda. And he was, I mean, this man was as black as midnight. And he represented a million black men and women, mostly black women, in a township of South Africa before apartheid took over. And his message was, the African National Congress is a communist front organization. Please help us. Please don't let this happen to our country. A black man touring the United States, asking for help, asking for support to stop the communists from taking over his country.
Yep.
And a very moving presentation. Very moving.
we must learn from both history and by example. And there is one right there. By the way, folks, go to thelibertyman.com and scroll down and look at the COVID-19 mosquito netting anti-mask, which is a novelty. You can also go to ruralsurvival.life. But no, go to libertyman.com and scroll down for the mask. And I love this. First of all, this is 100% disabled veteran owned enterprise, period. All profits, of which there are very little, go to improve the quality of life for Tim and his family. All supplies are purchased locally whenever possible. So, you know, and it really is kind of funny that you do this with a great deal of humor that does make me and I'm sure other people smile. It's nice.
Well, Tim Spencer is a very dear friend. We met at a fundraising event for my client who was charged with murder. It was sponsored by the Western Cherokee Nation, and he was in charge of security for the Western Cherokee Nation at the time, and that was about 11 years ago this fall. And he's the only Navy veteran who's gone public about seeing the Navy map while on active duty in the Navy because he has 100% disability. He was injured twice in U.S. Navy submarines. The first time, he showed up for his first duty assignment, and the officer in charge of building says, gentlemen, we don't have bunks for you. You're going to string up hammocks between the warheads of the Polaris nuclear missiles. No radiation. Don't worry. It'll be fine. Didn't quite work out that way. 8 hours a day, 7 days a week for 6 months. It's a six-month tour. These men were exposed to not quite lethal doses of ionizing radiation. The second injury was walking in one of these gangplank things between two ships with a 100-pound steel container full of documents. He slipped and broke his back, and that went undiagnosed and untreated for 4 months because every 2 months to do a six-month tour. Those two injuries gave him 100% disability, and he's got massive health issues because of those two injuries that took place in the mid-1980s. But he did go public with me. He's on my DVD, Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You, talking about the map he saw while active duty in the Navy doing classified work for the U.S. Navy in New Orleans. Out of the 24 Navy veterans I've interviewed, he doesn't have a pension that can be taken away from him. He's got disability that can't be taken away from him, so he didn't have any fear of going public.
Mm-hmm. And the map he saw, of course, is the map that you feature?
On my website.
There you go.
It's on my website, yeah. Right.
Which, folks, you can go to thelibertyman.com and scroll down. You can see the Navy map there. It's clearly marked. But I got to tell you, man, you really – have you expanded – is it my imagination or have you expanded your website quite a bit? Because I'm just
– It has been expanded quite a bit.
We're adding
2 to 3 things a day.
Okay.
The daily intelligence briefing is updated every 24 hours. A friend of mine, you know my bio. My Rolodex looks like something you would use from a Tom Clancy novel.
Mennonites.
One of my friends, former counterintelligence agent, he writes this thing every day. He's retired. You go to the daily intelligence briefing, you think, my word, who in the world takes the time to put all this together every day of the week?
Well, he does. I bookmarked that separately from your site, but yes, the daily intelligence briefing is awesome. I mean,
this guy has a PhD. He's besides being a former counterintelligence agent, he's also got a PhD. Very bright guy. And, his audience was 24 men before I said to him, hey, I'd like to put this on my website. And he says, John, I think that's a great idea. Let's do that. So now instead of 24 men reading, we got thousands of people who can read it every day.
Which, I mean, okay. So just go, for example, folks, just going back to Friday, September 11th. Okay. truth. Propaganda, economy, some of these categories, if you will, America's current level, threat level, USA is high, and on and on and on. Is there anything in there that, you want to hit that we didn't hit? I mean, I kind of dominated again and maybe I shouldn't have done that.
We need to come back to basics. Look at the goal of our opposition, socialists, communists, Democrats, Muslims. They've already shown that they're willing to kill innocent people, to damage and destroy millions of dollars of personal property, real estate and personal property. They've already demonstrated that. So it's all on the table. We have documented evidence in the form of firsthand witness of a deputy sheriff that Antifa is involved in setting fires, which has taken lives and destroyed millions of dollars of property. I'm looking for them to attack the power grid. That's a very vulnerable, easy target, which in turn will disrupt everything else, depending on if it's localized. Disruption of the power grid is relatively simple. As I tell people, you don't need explosives or weapons to disrupt the power grid. All you need is to go to the local hardware store and come out with hacksaws, hatchets, come-alongs, common construction tools.
Mm-hmm.
And you can disrupt not only the power grid, but the water, fresh water supply, the water treatment plants, take care of the sewage, gas lines, telecommunications, with bolt cutters, hacksaws, hatchets, and so forth. Nothing sophisticated, no weapons, no explosives. And this is no secret. This is common knowledge. I'm not telling a secret here. all this infrastructure typically sits alone with no guards and a chain link fence. Maybe, maybe not a chain link fence sometimes. Very vulnerable all over the country. So I fully expect these kinds of attacks to take place. We have winter coming up. You need to have a way to heat your home, at least one room, with without the power grid working or without natural gas. A way to heat up some food and eat it if the power grid's down. And, of course, you have to have the food. You have to have the water. If you don't have a proprietary source of water, you need to store up hundreds of gallons of water. That needs to happen. Needs to happen right now. No assumptions. No assumptions. EMP shield. Great device. One of the national publications, I always forget if it was Popular Mechanics or Popular Science, they published enough details to fabricate a localized EMP device to make an EMP device that would take out a couple of city blocks with no nuclear explosion using conventional explosives. So EMP is certainly a threat, and of course, at the top levels, I believe the communists, Russians, and Chinese are complicit in what's going on right now in the streets of America. I do firmly believe that. And EMP devices are certainly on the table as well, Doug.
Yeah. By the way, I think that could be I think there's more than anecdotal evidence for that, as you mentioned. I think that there's sufficient direct evidence that, you know, at the periphery, you might have to collect, but once you put it together, you can find that there's this insurgency from within by outside actors, including but not limited to China. Yeah, I agree.
Right. Well, a friend of mine, he's been on my show a number of times, Command Sergeant Major Dan Page. He did a presentation in my home back in, well, it's been 20 years ago. He showed a video that was circulating among the high-ranking NCOs at the time that were in Bosnia. His job was liaison with the Russians in Bosnia. And he says, well, here's a video of some Muslims cutting heads off in a certain place. And I was asking him, is there a direct command control liaison between those Muslims and the Muslims you're dealing with? And he says, yes, there is. Direct command control liaison between the Muslims in Bosnia and the Muslims that were cutting the heads off. But it's important to make these linkages so it makes sense to people and they know what they're really up against. If you don't know what you're up against, you really can't plan for it, can you, Doug?
No, not at all. And you mentioned Muslims. I'm going to tell people this. Folks, this coming Friday, Randy Taylor is going to join me, and we put together a group of investigators, and we've been looking at different things, and we went over some very interesting information. John, I'll share this with you, and I'll share this with the public. So if you are going to write a check in support of Black Lives Matter, all right, where do you send it to? Where did that $250 million from, what was it, the NFL go to? Does Black Lives Matter have a front office?
They do.
Okay. Who staffs it?
They're in what, eight or about at least eight cities, as of my recollection.
Right. Okay. So we take that and we start going backwards from there. And I gotta tell you, everything has been pointing to the former Muslim bathhouse Barry Barack Hussein Obama. You know, I'm telling mm-hmm. you, okay? It looks like there are, you've got to fill in some spaces yet, but boy, I'll tell you what, it certainly looks like there's a command and control structure there for those, for the Democrat, Muslim, Communist, Socialists. And no, I didn't say it in the manner you say it, but, there it is.
Close enough.
Yeah.
Close enough. Oh, not that it matters.
Well, speaking of saying or acronyms, I want to invite you to, you turn 50 and, of course I'm beyond that, but you turn 50 even earlier, you start getting advertisements from AARP, right? I mean,
there's no socialist organization. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, here's what I decided to do. I'm going to join the AARP, except mine is Armed and Angry Ready Patriots. Because I'm armed, I'm angry, I'm ready, and I'm a patriot. So,
right.
Anyway, right. Just saying. I don't know why I said that. And folks, backed by or now available by popular demand, John Moore's masks, the novelty non-preventative masks, but it'll keep you in compliance. Go to thelibertyman.com and order away. And even hot mm-hmm. pink. Do you have hot pink right now? I mean, you do?
I don't know what's in stock, but a friend of mine, she's a physicist, works for a Fortune 500 company, and she saw that mask and she says, John, I want one of those. and so I got her one, I think she'll get it in a day or two. Very bright lady with a lot of responsibility. But, the masks are a fun thing, but it is practical. We call it the Phoenix Max for the following reason. My Thursday guest, he lives in Phoenix, in the state of Arizona, where it's 110 degrees in the shade. Mm-hmm. You go outside by yourself. It's a $250 fine and a misdemeanor conviction if you don't wear a mask outside on a lake by yourself, anywhere. It doesn't matter if you're on a lake or not. The golf course doesn't matter. How insane is it?
That's beyond insane. Oh. I mean, it's all about control, isn't it? I mean,
it is.
Yeah.
It is. out here where I live, the only people wearing a mask out here are city people that come out that don't know any better, but nobody's wearing a mask out where I am. No, nobody.
Well, I'm watching people slowly but surely starting to say, screw this, I'm not going to do it. And that's giving me some relief. Now, on the other hand, I've seen people just go completely berserk in the opposite direction. You know, so I think we're being separated and identified. You know, you walk down the street or you go. I'm sorry, you go into a store, and if you're not wearing a mask, I think people identify you as a supporter of Donald Trump as opposed to a supporter of the Constitution. You know, but anyway.
Yeah. It's been 3 months ago, but a friend of mine who has a retail establishment in a nearby city, 3 months ago, he says, John, I learned how to identify the liberals. And I said, really, how's that? And he says, well, it's easy. They're wearing masks.
Yeah. Although some conservatives acquiesce and subjugate themselves to control, which, you know, I guess, I got nothing against masks. I've got nothing against vaccines either. What do you think about that, folks? But here's what I have a problem with. I got a problem with somebody saying you have to wear a mask and you have to have a vaccine. I got a problem with that.
We've got the documentary at my website, Vax, V-A-X-X-E-D. Yes. And person watches that. There's a follow-up, Vax 2, by the way. If they watch those two documentaries, even one of them, they may never get another vaccine in their life. I didn't need to watch the documentaries to know that, you know, I took chemistry in high school, and I know that aluminum and mercury do not belong inside human beings. That's all I need to know.
Yeah, exactly. And let me rephrase what I said, because I don't want to get emails. I personally do not believe in the vaccines, the dirty vaccines that we have, because I think all but maybe tetanus, and I may be even wrong on that, are dirty.
No, I used to think the same way, but I'll never get a tetanus shot again either.
Okay, so they're all bad, right? I mean.
Right.
Okay. All right. So, but here's the bottom line. If you, whoever you are, want to get vaccinated, God bless you. Have at it. I mean, fine. It's up to you. If you want to wear a mask because it makes you feel, God knows what it makes you feel, but whatever it makes you feel, all right, then I'm not going to make fun of you, but I'll tell you what, don't tell me I got to wear one and don't make it a condition upon anything I do. That's all I'm saying. So,
well, yeah. Mike Adams is now saying that the, distribution of vaccines by the military is a cover story the president's using to pre-position the military for the fourth day of November to deal with the insurrection. That story has legs. It really does. Another 1 million were activated just last week, by the way, Doug, in case I got past you. So we've had the activation of 2 million military people. That you don't need that to distribute vaccines, but if you're going to put down a communist insurrection, you would need that many people.
Oh, do tell. Okay, so yeah, I completely, that went over my head.
That got past you. Yeah. That's Mike Adams, and you and I both know Mike.
Oh yeah, yeah. He was on last week with me, actually.
Yeah, I have a lot of respect for Mike and his work. Very bright guy, and his analysis I think is right on. Donald Trump, his sibling was saying, we stopped playing board games with Donald when we were children because he always won. He's thinking three or four steps ahead of everybody else. That's has been his MO since he was a child. Thinking you're going to outsmart Donald Trump, at least for the media and all his opposition, has been a massive mistake at every point of the way. Massive mistake. Yeah.
Well.
So. Yeah,
I'm not going to play Monopoly with him.
No,
he's got too many hotels to my houses.
Yeah, you'll have all the hotels, and you'll end up on, bankrupt.
not just Skid Row, but yeah. Wow. No, I guess I really never thought. I never thought about that, about the activation of the military prepositioning for a communist insurrection.
Impossible communist invasion, because the insurrection is backed up by the Russians and Chinese. there's a lot of very serious heavy-duty players in action here, and foreign governments as well, foreign actors. We as a country are being set up, and the president's aware of it. There's some belief and some evidence that his son Barron was harmed by a vaccine, and even without verification there, we do have verification that Robert Kennedy Jr. was going to be part of the administration, primarily because of dealing with vaccines and trying to stop the harm caused by vaccines. Robert Kennedy did not become part of the administration. I think somebody finally got to the president and said, Mr. President, we can't do that your first term. The power of the pharmaceutical industry is more than we can overcome. Let's wait. Let's wait. Let Robert Kennedy do his thing. Once you're reelected and they can't stop you, then we'll bring Robert Kennedy in. I think that was the conversation that took place back in January of 2017.
You do know that
Robert Kennedy was going to be part of the administration, correct?
It was my understanding that there was a discussion, and there was, the president's chief of staff overruled or somehow got involved. There was a, shall we say, a to-do there.
Right.
You know, over that. Yes, yes. But, okay. Yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense. Wow. All right.
Well, there's what the president wanted to do, and then what the chief of staff gave a dose of reality to the president about what's doable politically. And you know, obviously, neither one of us was there to make up firsthand observations, but that's the way things work, is that the president would tell his people what he wants to do, and then his people have to advise him on the reality of how doable it is.
Okay. All right. Yeah, it makes sense. Wow. 3 hours a day. Folks, John Moore is on the radio for three, not one, not two, but 3 hours.
Except Mondays when I'm on for 5 hours.
Well, that's true.
I walk out of here, my head is spinning. Doug.
Oh, I can only imagine.
I have to reorient myself as to time and place.
Man. How do you triage? Okay. And this is not a softball question. This is, and maybe some people are thinking the same way. How do you triage headlines? How do you triage the news and all the stuff that gets thrown at you? How do you triage it for?
I look for the, okay. I was trained as an intelligence analyst. I was trained to look at two things, the material itself and the source of the material. Is the material consistent with what I already know to be true? Is the source a reliable source? A source that has no, a article or video that has no attribution, gets a dramatic reduction in how valuable it is to me. If, however, the material itself is very consistent with what I already know to be true, then that can have a relatively high value. So let's give a couple of examples. Let's say a homeless person tells me that, John, I saw Chinese tanks on a train going past me at 3 a.m. this morning. So the source would have a low rating, but because I know that Chinese vehicles have been seen on trains by other people, I would give that a fairly high rating. Now, if Doug Hagman says, John, at noon today I saw Chinese tanks on a train here in Pennsylvania, I would give the source a high rating and the material itself a high rating. So I'm always looking for things that are consistent with what I already know to be true, that have a bearing on what's going on as opposed to just what's interesting. Who's involved? What's taking place? Where is it taking place? The level of reporting, is it a good article that's been written? Does it have a verifiable source that I can backtrack to if I need to. Is the video of high quality and giving a date, time, and place, as opposed to just saying, here's a video, and we don't know when and where it happened. And so there's a lot that goes into that, Doug, and I've been doing it for so many decades, I don't have to think about it anymore consciously.
So, I mean, so to you, it's an investigative process. It's an extension of your investigative. Yeah. Okay. All right. And folks, maybe you should approach it that way too, because I see comments all the time. Well, what do you think of this or whatever this could be? You know, whatever subject it might be. What do you think about this? And I know that.
Well, QAnon has been in the news a lot the last week or so.
Yes. Go ahead.
And, you know, being part, you know, I was involved in a federal antitrust lawsuit as part of the defense team in 1972. And I know how the federal system works. I know there can't be 85,000 sealed indictments that would shut down the system. I know that can't happen.
Right.
It's not possible. So that discredits the whole story when part of it can't be true, simply can't be true. There aren't that many U.S. attorney's offices in the country. And 85,000 sealed indictments would shut them all down if they tried to prosecute them at one time. I use that as one example of throwing away a story because part of it simply can't be true.
So I like QAnon for one reason. It gets people thinking. I don't like it for the rest of the reasons. It makes, in my view anyway, it makes people complacent. Trust the plan, what plan? You know, you mean it's not up to me, it's being handled? Hey, if somebody tells me, don't worry, it's being handled. No. I got to see it. I got to, if I'm not handling it, I want to be right there to see it being handled. So, I mean, but I don't believe the premise, I guess, is what I'm saying, you know. But hey, there's nothing wrong with asking questions, asking, you know, why, you're broadening your mind and asking questions. But the delivery in this case and even the purpose perhaps might be nefarious. I'm with you on this.
Unverified sources are suspect to begin with. You know, but then in doing what you and I do, we're both broadcast journalists. I have to protect my sources.
Well, that's
so people put their trust in me because I'm a known source, and I in turn frequently have to put my trust in a private, trusted source of my own. But they have to remain private because it would put them in jeopardy.
That's it. You know who your sources are. You just can't say. So, you know, when you cite an anonymous source, that doesn't mean it's anonymous to you. It's anonymous to the listener or the viewer. That's correct. Yes. Right? Did I say that right?
Well, if I would reveal the identity of sources, I'm not going to have sources anymore. They're going to say, man, we can't trust this guy anymore.
Right. Do that one time and, you know, Oh, man, you wouldn't have anything. Yeah, exactly. John Moore, thelibertyman.com. Folks, the guy does 5 hours, 5 hours of radio on Mondays. He's kind enough to come on for 2 hours.
It's work, Doug. It's work.
It's work.
It is work. That's how I'm making my living. I was just thinking the other day, the man I've worked the most murder cases with going back to the 1979, his name is Frank Carlson. He's a well-known. In my area, if you're a chief of police or a judge and you get in trouble, Frank Carlson's who you call. And I was thinking, man, if Frank calls me about another murder case, what am I going to do? How am I going to respond? Because he knows I'm like an old war horse. When the war horse hears the cannons go off, he's ready to go to war. And that's just who I am. So my conclusion is I would become an advisor. And I would have some young hotshot investigator do what I told him to do.
There you go.
And I might take a couple of hours here and there to review what's going on and give a sense of direction. But my job is being a broadcast journalist. That's what I do. And I know what happens when I get involved in a murder. It takes over my life.
It does.
I've had that happen enough times to know what happens.
Yep.
It's not just a, working on being a homicide detective is not a job. It consumes you. It becomes who you are.
Oh yeah.
If you're going to be good at it.
Yep.
And I can't do that right now and become a broadcast journalist, but I can be an advisor to a young investigator who needs some direction, and be told what to do. And I can do that if necessary. So that's my conclusion there, Doug.
Well, it's very well stated. And, you know, I'll tell you what, you and folks.
There's no clocking out at 5 p.m. and going home.
No.
When you're a homicide detective.
No.
There isn't.
Nope.
No. You eat, breathe, and sleep this stuff 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
I remember doing one back in 86, 87, 88, something like that in a nearby town. And man, I'll tell you what, I don't think I've ever been as tired as that time. And I just remember it just sucked everything out of me. And it's emotional too, isn't it? I mean,
the last murder I worked, it drained me completely emotionally because we had an innocent man convicted of murder because the prosecutor withheld evidence from the jury, and he's just released from prison. This was 11 years ago. He just released from prison in the last few weeks after finally having it overturned.
Wow. And you were involved in that, right?
I was part of the defense team, and we had the evidence, but the prosecutor held it back to the jury that wasn't allowed to hear it. We had the evidence. We had the exculpatory evidence. Very strong exculpatory evidence. Extremely strong exculpatory evidence. Putting the man we know killed this girl with this girl 3 days before she died, and then his fingerprints being found in her car the morning after her death, and had just the outside of the car had been rained on where the fingerprints were found, which meant the fingerprints were there after it rained.
Right. I had a recent call. It surprised me and kind of put a smile on my face from the Attorney General's office, an investigator working on a task force on unsolved homicide from 1978. I know who did it. The police know who did it. Everyone knows who did it. And this guy's still walking around.
I got a similar one in my backlog. It's a tragedy. I'm not going to go into detail, but.
I know. It sucks. Yeah. Hey,
the sheriff, the chief of police, all on board, but.
Yeah. Well, the DA and their, and this might, we only have one shot, and of course it affects the win rate, and, I'm up for re-election, and, just shut up,
Yeah. I know.
We need an update on your TR6 restoration project. I see the photographs. It's a fine.
Well, we got
vehicle.
The whole front end taken apart. The front end got new slotted disc for the disc brakes. All new pieces up there. All Coney shocks, coil springs, everything new on the front end, and that's. We thought we had all the parts necessary this past Saturday, but it turns out we had not ordered a couple of parts, so they're in order. It's getting a new rear sway bar installed soon also. So it's all coming together very nicely. Thank you for asking.
I like the picture of the interior, the cockpit, shall we say. I like that picture. It with the burl.
Solid, handmade, solid walnut dash. Yeah. I mean, there's a guy in California that makes those. The original factory one had a plywood dash with a walnut veneer, but this is solid walnut. It's a piece of work. It really is art. Artwork.
Yeah. Well, folks, you can see that on the libertyman.com on his website. And don't forget to get your masks from John Moore, the Liberty Man. Go to thelibertyman.com. In fact, I'm going to put the link directly there to your the
front
page.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, because I got to get some. It's a statement, folks.
Some places you have to go.
Yes.
If you need to go to the medical clinic, they're not going to let you in the door. unless you got one of these things on, some kind of mask.
And I'll tell you what, I've got a medical appointment I've got to attend to, or I got to be at in a couple of weeks. So that will be a conversation piece to be sure.
There you go. There you go.
All right, brother. Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Have a great day. Have a great week.
Yeah, you too, man. Talk to you soon. All right. Folks, that was John Moore, thelibertyman.com. That's his website, thelibertyman.com. Make sure you get a mask. I am anti-mask, but this is funny. Gotta go. Have a good night.